from 90.9 WBUR, I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston. Massachusetts voters will decide the fate of four ballot questions this November. WBUR, UMass, and the Boston Globe are hosting a series of debates on each question. Today, question three, banning certain types of confinement for some farm animals.
Nobody really who thinks about it would think this is a decent way to keep an animal. If you kept a dog like that, you would no doubt get fined.
But some say cages are necessary.
In 1968, he went into a cage system, which we still have today. It eliminates the problems of cannibalism, which we used to run into.
Still others are worried about food prices.
To essentially remove probably the most affordable and accessible form of protein from the diets of those who are already not perhaps eating enough nutritious food, to me doesn't seem very humane.
The debate over question three, next on Radio Boston. First, this news.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
From 90.9 WBUR, this is a special live edition of Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Boston Globe political reporter Joshua Miller.
As you can hear, we are broadcasting live, and we're at the McCormick Theater on the campus of UMass Boston. We're here to discuss some important issues that Massachusetts voters will decide this November, not the presidential election, but the four questions on the statewide ballot. We're calling this special effort Election Ballot Debate Series. It's hosted by WBUR, the McCormick Graduate School at UMass Boston, and the Boston Globe.
Every Tuesday in our four-week series, we'll be diving deep into one of the ballot questions. Today, we'll hear about the debate over question three, which would ban tight confinement for certain farm animals and mandate that all eggs sold in Massachusetts come from cage-free hens.
We also have a great panel with us today, and we would like everyone listening to get involved as well. We'll tell you how to do that in just a moment. But first, Dean of the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies, David Cash, joins us to tell us a little bit more about these debates and about UMass's role in them. Dean Cash, welcome and thank you.
Great. Thank you, Deborah and Josh, for moderating this important debate on the treatment of farm animals in Massachusetts, question three on the November 8th ballot. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second of four debates on the ballot questions facing Massachusetts voters this fall, broadcast live here at the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston, this city's public research university. The McCormick Graduate School, along with our co-hosts, WBUR and the Boston Globe, are delighted to welcome you. And also a special thanks to today's debaters, Paul Shapiro, Vice President for the Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society, and Bill Bell of the New England Brown Egg Council. Ballot initiatives are one of the most direct way that voters get to set policy. About half the states in the United States offer ballot initiatives, and as is happening here, they spark civic discussions about issues that directly impact people's lives and their communities. Today's focus is on farm animal treatment. If passed, this law would prohibit breeding pigs, calves raised for veal, and egg-laying hens from being held in confined spaces, or products derived from such practices being sold in Massachusetts, even if produced in another state. The implications are myriad, touching on everything from philosophy to economics to rural communities to food prices to neuroscience to ethics to interstate commerce. I'm sure some of these issues will be raised today, and I look forward to a healthy and informative debate. And now I'll turn it over to Deborah and Josh.
All right. Thank you, Dean Cash. It is great to be here, and as Dean Cash said, we are talking about question three. That proposes banning the sale in Massachusetts of meat or eggs from hens, calves, and breeding pigs that are confined in a way that prevents them from moving around. We have a piece right now from WBUR's Andrea Shea that explains question three. Let's listen.
Cute pictures of baby pigs adorn posters in the Yes on 3 headquarters. The MSPCA supports the measure and is letting the animal lovers behind the ballot initiative use a small office at the Angel Animal Medical Center in Jamaica Plains.
Hi, my name is Brigitte, and I'm a volunteer with Yes on 3 to prevent animal cruelty.
With help from hundreds of volunteers, a coalition including the Humane Society of the United States won placement for question three on the state ballot. Stephanie Harris is the Yes on 3 campaign director and heads the Humane Society in Massachusetts.
A Yes on 3 is a vote for cage-free, so it's about giving farm animals enough space to turn around and extend their limbs. It's that modest.
That idea appears to be popular with voters. A recent WBUR poll shows 66% of respondents support question 3, and Harris says 100 family farms have signed on. If it passes, the law would eliminate the use of confining cages and crates for breeding pigs, calves raised for veal, and egg-laying hens.
In Massachusetts, there are more than 3,000 hens that are kept in these type of conditions right now. And so this is about giving those hens enough space, and it's about protecting the Massachusetts consumers from unsafe, substandard, and inhumane eggs and meat products.
But the 3,000 hens Harris just mentioned are all at one farm, Diamond Farm in the western Massachusetts town of Wendell. No other farms here use the methods that would be banned by question 3.
We've long abandoned these practices in Massachusetts, again, with the exception of one farm.
Brad Mitchell is with the Massachusetts Farm Bureau, a 6,000-member organization.
And I don't see them ever coming back, so we're a little perplexed as to why we're the target of this.
Mitchell says some of his members feel like pawns in a national campaign to drive policy in other states. Some opponents say the ballot question's biggest impact would be felt in the grocery store. While the vast majority of eggs produced in Massachusetts already conform to Yes on 3 space requirements, the motherload of eggs in markets, which come from large out-of-state producers, do not.
I don't want my affordable choice being taken away.
Diane Sullivan is an anti-poverty advocate from Medford who remembers feeding her family with eggs when she was struggling. She expects approval of the ballot question would cause egg prices here to skyrocket.
I'm trying to say people have the choice already, yet 90% of us buy conventional eggs because I'm sure for the most part that's what we can afford.
The Yes on 3 campaign claims the shift would cost a penny per egg. But this ballot question isn't just about chickens and eggs. Confining pregnant pigs in what are known as gestation crates, which a lot of farmers believe increases the chances their animals will give birth, is standard practice in other parts of the country. National Pork Producers Council President John Weber has a large pig operation in Iowa and represents 68,000 U.S. producers. He says approval of question 3 would limit the supply of pork in Massachusetts.
All this ballot initiative is going to do is going to restrict that one phase that one method is using, which happens to be the majority of the pork produced in the country. And believe me, it will have an economic impact on food prices.
But question 3 backers say food giants Costco, Oscar Mayer, and Smithfield Farms have already committed to not using products from pigs confined in so-called gestation crates. And Stephanie Harris of the Humane Society notes hundreds of companies, including McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts, have already pledged to transition to using only cage-free eggs over the next decade.
This is part of a global shift in the direction towards cage-free, and the Massachusetts initiative will codify a lot of changes that are already underway. With so many food companies pledging to go cage-free, it's the way of the future.
If voters decide question 3 should become law, the animal containment practices it seeks to end would be phased out by 2022. Massachusetts would join nearly a dozen other states that have passed similar laws, including Arizona, Maine, Florida, and Michigan.
That's WBUR's Andrea Shea reporting on question 3. Now to the debate. We asked the two groups on either side of question 3 to offer their chosen representative for today's debate. Citizens for Farm Animal Protection is a coalition of groups supporting the ballot question. That coalition includes the Humane Society of the U.S. and the MSPCA. Representing the Yes on 3 side, we have Paul Shapiro, Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the U.S. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Deb. It's an honor to be with you.
Also, representing opponents, we have Bill Bell, General Manager of the New England Brown Egg Council. Now, no formal ballot committee has been formed in opposition to question 3 just yet, but the council drafted the main opposition argument for the Secretary of State's voter guide. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Deborah.
Okay.
Before we begin, a few ground rules. We're breaking up this debate into two segments, economics, then science and ethics. We'll spend 20 minutes on each of these topics. Participants will have 1 minute to respond to each question from Deb and me. and 1 minute to rebut when necessary. Our producer sitting in the audience will raise up a green paper to mark 15 seconds left and a red paper to mark when 1 minute response time is up.
Paul Shapiro and Bill Bell will then each have 45-second closing statements at the end of this debate. And listeners, we want to tell you that there are several ways you can participate in this discussion. We are broadcasting a Facebook Live feed of today's event, so you can go to facebook.com/Radio Boston to watch this feed. You can submit your questions there as well. We're also taking questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag MA ballots, and that's ballots with an S.
Let's get started. Our first question, our first topic is economics. Paul Shapiro, this referendum would mandate all eggs sold in Massachusetts come from cage-free hens. Even supporters of question three acknowledge that prices are likely to go up for consumers. Why should Massachusetts families pay more for this key staple just so hens can have a little more room?
Well, thanks for the question, Josh. The egg industry's own studies, not Humane Society studies, but the egg industry's own studies find that for egg producers not to confine their birds in cages and instead to be using cage-free methods would only cost the producers about a penny or so more per egg. And so when you think about that, just a penny more, that's the reason why companies like McDonald's, which are very cost-conscious, are going 100% cage-free with all their eggs. And in fact, McDonald's has pledged that it's not even going to raise its prices even a single cent. But we don't have to think about what these companies may do or think about the egg industry studies. We can look at what happened in California, because California a couple years ago implemented a similar animal welfare reform. And 2 years later, California's egg prices are now roughly comparable to the rest of the nation. In fact, this summer, they've actually been lower than national egg prices. So agribusiness lobbyists may have an interest in painting a picture that if we have animal cruelty laws, there's going to be some type of an economic Armageddon. But keep in mind, all question three asks is that these animals be able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. It's hardly going to summon the four horsemen.
Paul, a paper... I want to press you a little bit on that data because there's some conflicting information out there. A paper last year from a professor at Oklahoma State University used grocery store scanner data from California and other states to estimate how California's animal welfare law, which is similar to the one proposed here in Massachusetts, changed the price of eggs. They found it raised prices by around 75 cents on average per dozen, which is a 22% increase over what the price of eggs would have been had the law not gone into effect. We can't extrapolate perfectly to Massachusetts, but my goodness, that's a lot more than 1 cent per egg. Can you assure consumers that something similar won't happen here?
Well, let's look at what happened in California, because when that law took effect, at the same time in the Midwest, unrelated, there was a major avian flu outbreak that caused tens of millions of chickens to be killed, which caused egg prices to rise across the country, including in California. So it's hard to look at the data from the time period that that one study was done and look at it as if it were somehow going to be actually extrapolatable to this situation. All at the same time, we should recognize that there are hidden costs associated with keeping animals locked up in cages. Right now, you're having hidden costs. For example, the hidden cost of increased animal cruelty, which is being paid for by the birds, but also the hidden cost of increased food safety risks. The reason why the Center for Food Safety and the Consumer Federation of America endorsed the yes vote on question three is because they know that Massachusetts consumers deserve protection from these substandard, inhumane, and unsafe products. When you confine animals in cramped cages, you increase the risk of salmonella. That's one more reason to vote yes on question three.
I think we're going to get to a section on the science, and we're looking forward to having Bill have an opportunity to respond to that. But first, I just want to dive into the economics a little bit more. What about people like Diane Sullivan, an advocate for the poor who lives in Medford, and she's in the audience today. We heard a little bit from her in the piece by WBUR's Andrea Shea. Diane has six kids and was once homeless. Let's listen.
Literally, we have so many families here in Massachusetts. I've been in this position more times than I choose to even remember, where I'm forced to make the decision between paying the rent and feeding my children. I've literally gathered change to go to the grocery store to spend a dollar on a dozen eggs, and I'm able to at least provide them with a source of protein. And to essentially remove probably the most affordable and accessible form of protein from the diets of those who are already not perhaps eating enough nutritious food, to me doesn't seem very humane.
Paul, what do you say to people like Diane who could be greatly affected by even a modest increase in the price of eggs?
Well, first, I want to congratulate Diane for the success that she's had. I've read in the paper that she's now an attorney, and I feel very good about what she's doing. That's fantastic. Second, though, I want to point out, right now, Stop and Shop, Star, Shaw's, Taco Bell, Walmart, Dollar Tree, all of these companies that could hardly be more cost-sensitive are going 100% cage-free. If this was really going to unleash the type of economic problems that the agribusiness lobbyists who are opposing Question 3 say, would they really be doing that? I don't think so. The reality is that when you have no rules for the treatment of animals on factory farms, what you have is that some producers cram their birds together in ways that are so inhumane that it would be illegal if the victims were dogs or cats. We wouldn't allow that type of cruelty for a dog or a cat to be kept in a cage so small where she couldn't even turn around and extend her limbs. And we need rules in society to prevent these big agribusinesses from doing the same exact thing to other animals like calves and mother pigs and egg-laying hens.
Okay, I want to give Bill a chance to respond here and just start by responding to some of the things that you've heard so far.
Thank you, Deborah. Let's start with facts. Studies are fine. We have a study that was done by Professor Kaiser at Cornell earlier this year, and it took the California egg prices and disallowed for the factors that Paul has
the
mentioned.
The avian flu. Mm-hmm.
Right. And his conclusion was that the cage-free eggs resulted in a price increase of 49 cents a dozen on average, which is not 1 cent per dozen, but 4 cents. That's a study, again. It's unfortunately you don't have a visual aid segment. I have the California versus national daily egg prices from USDA very recently, and this graph shows the one line is the national egg price and the other is the California egg price. And the average discrepancy in 2014 was 16%. In 2015, it's 49%. In 2016 average, it's 90%. And so I think that any reasonable grocery store check comparing downtown LA prices to the national prices would show a huge difference of almost $2 a dozen. So factually, I think a let's forget the studies for a minute. Let's just say go to reality, go to USDA figures, and the discrepancy, let's forget this dollar, a penny an egg. It's just wrong, okay. And it has been proven wrong.
Okay, so prices will likely go up at some level. We may not agree at how much those prices will go up, but we do know that major corporations like McDonald's and Walmart are saying we're going to go toward more humane treatment of animals. And this is the way the market is heading. Shouldn't Massachusetts get on this and do it? That's what I'm wondering. What's the argument really against it at this point?
One of your speakers on the recorded segment said all Massachusetts is doing is codifying what's happening at the national level in the free market. And that is certainly true in terms of the free market. We listen to our consumers. That's what this country and the free market is all about. And yes, about 200 companies have already said, as retailers, as restaurants, as producers, as food service companies, we are going to go cage-free. And HSUS should be commended for having created this awareness. We don't think cage-free is necessarily the best solution, but we commend the spirit and the ethics behind this. Reality is, however, it's not simply codifying it into law, as it was said. This is making it a law. This is not writing some regulations. This is a law which forces every single taxpayer in Massachusetts to pay more for food service and every single homeowner to pay considerably more for eggs, and we think that's really unfair.
Okay, out of time.
Paul, I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Thank you very much, Josh. So if everybody was already doing this, I would wonder, why are the agribusinesses so upset? You know, the opposition campaign to question three is being bankrolled by an agribusiness and oil tycoon from Missouri because he knows that, yes, a lot of folks are doing it, but not everybody. In fact, many of these grocers don't have any standards for the treatment of calves used for veal. In the veal industry, it's customary for them to take a calf on the first day of his life from his mother, put him inside of a crate so cramped he can't even turn around for his entire life. They chain him by the neck so he can't even lie down comfortably. And they leave him there to languish for a month, for month after month. In fact, by the end of the 4 months before when they finally come in and unchain him, his muscles have atrophied so severely that he has difficulty even walking to his own slaughter. That is the type of abject animal cruelty that Massachusetts voters want protection from in the Massachusetts marketplace, and that's one more reason it's so important to vote yes on question three.
I want to ask you something, Paul, here about the costs to farmers, the costs of transitioning. I know it's not a huge issue in Massachusetts. We only have one farm, but transitioning from a battery cage system. But there are costs of operating a cage-free system. You know, it's more expensive than a conventional system. What do you say to farmers, particularly farmers outside of the state, who are going to have to pay for this additional burden, on how to deal with this for the most part? What's your response to the cost to farmers? They are going to have an additional cost.
Well, Deb, there is a long transition period that provides any farmers who are still confining their animals to the point of immobilization to come into compliance with question three. At the same time, right now there have been no rules. In Massachusetts, there are essentially no rules for how farm animals can be confined. And the result of that is that you have lots of producers who are selling eggs in Massachusetts and pork and veal from animals who are confined so restrictively they can barely move an inch their entire lives. We would never permit that for other animals. And is it too much to ask these egg producers to pay a penny or two more per egg by their own economic analyses, what their own studies show, in order to give these animals a better life, in order to prevent that type of animal cruelty and to have better food safety? I don't think that's really too much to ask, and I think that most Massachusetts voters will agree with that.
Bill, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that.
Sure. There was... 2 years ago, a group put together a National Coalition for Sustainable Egg Production, which was not agribusiness. There were some agribusiness people involved, but there was also the American Veterinary Medical Association. There was American Humane Association and a number of food service companies who are just trying to do the right thing by their customers. And they did a long study, two flocks on a real farm with eggs housed differently. And the conclusion was that the price to the producer for producing cage-free eggs was 36% higher. Now, that eggs are inelastic in their demand and supply. Because eggs are so essential for protein and there's no substitute, if the price of eggs go up, people don't slack off when they're buying and the price doesn't come down. They stay up. And the producer's costs, which is a 36% increase, is going to be reflected in the marketplace. And I can assure you it's going to be more than a penny or two a dozen, penny or two an egg.
Very briefly, Paul.
Thank you, Josh. So the study that Mr. Bell was referring to was widely panned by independent experts because what they did in that study was they had people running a cage-free egg farm who frankly had zero experience ever running a cage-free egg farm. I mean, it would be like if the Patriots decided that instead of starting Tom Brady, they were going to voluntarily choose to put in their third-string rookie QB with no experience. They wouldn't do that because they know the results wouldn't be as good. And when McDonald's, who was the primary funder of that study, looked at the results, they agreed and they decided that they were going to go 100% cage-free. I think in Massachusetts, we ought to be willing to raise the animal cruelty laws sufficiently so that we don't have a lower standard here than what McDonald's and Walmart and Dollar Tree are requiring of their egg suppliers. So in short, free Brady and free the animals.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to a special debate on ballot question three. That's the proposal to ban certain confinement of some farm animals. Our panel includes the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the U.S., Paul Shapiro, and Bill Bell, who's General Manager of the New England Brown Egg Council. We are right now focusing on the economics of the question, and we are taking listener questions on Twitter with the hashtag MA ballots, and that is ballots with an S. I want to also bring up something here, because an argument against this question, and one that's still sort of being wrangled over in the legal community, involves federal interstate commerce laws. And those laws prohibit one state from imposing rules that would affect commerce in another state. So I'm just wondering, in terms of that legal argument and what's happening with that, Paul, what do you say to those folks who say, can one state, like Massachusetts, cannot impose laws that affect commerce in another state? Because what we're doing is saying that eggs sold in Massachusetts also have to be done in this, or certain types of meat, pork and veal, also have to be comply with these rules. So how are we not violating the federal interstate commerce clause?
There is no violation at all. It's very simple. In fact, the courts have already ruled time and time again on this. They've upheld California's similar law banning the sale of foie gras, this cruel and inhumane pâté from force-fed ducks, on Commerce Clause issues. And half a dozen courts have also upheld similar laws regulating the restricting the sale of puppies from puppy mills, even from out of state. The state has the power to regulate commerce within its borders, and Massachusetts does this all the time. In Massachusetts, for example, there is a law that says if you want to sell cigarettes in Massachusetts, so they need to be produced in a fire-safe manner. So if you throw them on the ground, they're less likely to cause a fire. Well, that applies to wherever the cigarettes are produced, in or out of state. And the courts have ruled on this time and time again, that the state does have the power to protect consumer safety and to enact animal cruelty laws. And that's what Question 3 does.
We spoke with an attorney, actually, right before this, who said that he thinks it's likely that this will go to the Supreme Court, that actually that this case will go, and whether one state can do it and whether we need what we need to do on a federal level for this.
It's possible. Anybody can tell. The agribusiness interests often do like to use litigation when they don't get their way on the ballot. But we'll see what happens. And right now, the Ninth Circuit has already ruled in favor of nearly identical law regulating the force feeding of ducks and geese in California on Commerce Clause issues. So we feel very confident. Consumers don't want animals being abused in such hideous ways as what is common on factory farms today, and they certainly don't want to be subjected to these inhumane and unsafe products. And Massachusetts has the right to protect its own consumers.
Bill, do you want to jump in briefly?
I don't, because this is not, in my mind, a question that should involve lawyers and the Supreme Court, etc. It's doing what's right. And animal confinement, putting hens in small places, is not what's at issue here. That has been decided by the consumers. Week after week, I get a daily electronic newsletter, almost day after day, another group of food service people or restaurants says we are going cage-free. And that is something that we understand. If that's what the consumers want, that's what we are doing. What is wrong is the ballot question being faced not by the Supreme Court, but by Massachusetts voters in November. And that ballot issue is poorly written, and it will redound to the great disadvantage of Massachusetts people. And as the Massachusetts Veterinary Medical Association says, it has unforeseen consequences. And to be taking what the consumers are asking for and mandating it, that everybody in Massachusetts has to buy these kinds of eggs, that's what's wrong with this ballot question.
I want to we're running out of time for this segment, so Paul, I just want to press you on one issue. There's an argument that this ballot question here in Massachusetts is an attempt by the Humane Society and others to make Massachusetts the test case to push a national agenda to eliminate these types of confinement, or even, as the National Pork Producers Council says, part of the Humane Society's push to, quote, significantly reduce the consumption of meat. Is that true?
Well, Josh, it's hardly a test case when 10 other states have passed similar laws, many of which have already gone through the courts and been decided.
But none of those banned the sale of...
California's does on eggs.
But that was done by the legislature, not by the voters, correct?
That was done by the legislature, but the law is still a law, no matter who passes it. But it's hardly a test case, because there are lots of other laws on the books regarding this topic as well. But I guess I would suggest the following. It's hard for the agribusiness lobby to have it both ways. They can't say, hey, this ballot measure is unnecessary because the whole market is going in this direction, but at the same time, if you pass it, it's going to cause all types of economic consequences. You just can't have it both ways. The fact of the matter is that in Massachusetts, there are thousands of animals who are locked in cages where they can barely move their whole lives. And it's about more than them, too, here in Massachusetts. One pork corporation testified at a legislative hearing not too long ago that it wants to confine pigs here in Massachusetts in gestation crates. What that looks like is taking a customary practice in the pork industry, defended by the person we heard in this BUR segment earlier, where they take a pig, artificially inseminate her, lock her inside of a crate 2 foot wide. She can't even turn around. They lock that crate behind her, and they leave her in there to languish. She's essentially in a coffin her entire life. And after months go by, she's maniacally biting on the bars of her cage, staining the concrete floor in front of her with blood from her mouth. And then she finally gives up because she realizes she's never getting out. We have a chance with question three to prevent that type of animal cruelty from becoming entrenched in Massachusetts, and we ought to take it.
Just very quickly to press you on that question. The National Pork Producers Council alleges that this question is part of the Humane Society's push to, quote, significantly reduce the consumption of meat nationally. Is that true?
Look, Josh, it's such an absurd point from them. The fact of the matter is this. Whether you're a vegetarian or a meat eater or anything in between, everybody should be able to agree that a baby veal calf, a mother pig, an egg-laying hen ought to be able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. That's why more than 100 family farmers here in Massachusetts endorse the yes vote on question three. That's why more than 500 Massachusetts veterinarians endorse the yes vote on question three, because it brings everybody together, no matter what your dietary preferences are. Dietary preferences aren't on the ballot. Question three is, and if you think that farm animals ought to be able to turn around and extend their limbs, you ought to vote yes on
three.
Why
Massachusetts, though? Why not another state?
Well, lots of states have heard these and have had these types of ballot measures, and every single one of them that's voted on them has passed it overwhelmingly by double digits. And in Massachusetts, there are no rules for the treatment of farm animals, none at all. And as I said earlier, there are thousands of animals in Massachusetts enduring this type of inhumane treatment. We have a pork corporation testifying they want to start putting pigs inside of gestation crates. Massachusetts voters don't want that type of animal cruelty. The MSPCA, the Humane Society, the Animal Rescue League of Boston, Zoo New England, all of these Massachusetts animal welfare groups and food safety groups are arguing in favor of yes on three because we know that consumers in Massachusetts don't want animal cruelty and they want protection from these inhumane and unsafe products.
I just want to make sure, well, before we close out the economics, that we give Bill a chance to respond, and also to say if you do know, Bill, anything about what might happen to the costs of pork and veal because of this question as well.
I need to go back to these thousands of animals in Massachusetts that are cruelly confined. It is just not true. There are 3,000 hens at Diamond Egg Farm in western Massachusetts, which apparently are being alluded to. Those hens are by themselves in cages. They are not crushed together. They have more space than would be allowed under the ballots, under the question on the ballot. Everybody, the Diamonds, have been opening that farm to people who want to come look. The people who come, including legislators, have said this is a wonderful place, and how could anyone fault this? Unless you have your mind philosophically saying cages are bad, but the space allowed per hen, people come away saying this is a superb facility, and why would anyone want to change this? And it's just kind of slanderous to be putting this family under the gun when they have been treating their hens wonderfully. It's not reflected in any way in the production of the hens. And so we really do not think this is an issue with the egg farm in western Massachusetts.
In western Massachusetts. But what about if we go to meat? Do you know? Are you prepared to answer that question in terms of what you know, what might happen to the cost of pork or veal if this goes forward in Massachusetts?
I hesitate to use studies but the study that we had done at Cornell estimated the cost of pork would increase by a little over twice. The veal industry has said, we are phasing out of veal crates by the end of 2017, so that's really not an issue.
Okay. All right, I want to remind our listeners, you are listening to a special edition of Radio Boston. We are broadcasting live from the McCormick Auditorium at UMass Boston. This is the second in our four-part series of debates on all of the Massachusetts ballot questions. It's sponsored by our partners at UMass Boston's McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies and the Boston Globe. We are broadcasting live on 90.9 WBUR, and we are streaming live video on WBUR.org, bostonglobe.com, umb.edu, as well as on Facebook at WBUR. And, of course, we're talking about question three, which proposes banning the sale in Massachusetts of meat or eggs from hens, calves, and pigs that are confined in a way that prevents them from moving around. Listeners, you can join our conversation. Send us a tweet or a comment on our Facebook page at Radio Boston. You can also use the hashtag MAballots with an S. Let's shift gears now to some of the science and the ethics of this question. A reminder, you will be asked questions. Our panelists, each of you, you have 1 minute to respond. The first question goes to Paul Shapiro. The ballot question would require egg-laying hens to have access to at least 1.5 feet of usable floor space. Some might argue that's not enough space for a bird to live in. Others might say that's just fine. How much of a difference do we know that this extra space would really make?
You're absolutely right, Deb. It's a very modest measure. What this would say is that the birds have to be able to fully spread their wings, and it defines that by saying it's about 1.5 square feet. And people aren't really so much concerned, voters aren't so concerned about whether it's 1.5 square feet or something else. What they're concerned about is making sure these animals are treated with basic decency. Right now in the egg industry, the overwhelming majority of the eggs are being produced by birds who have far less than even 0.5 square feet. Now, if you're not a mathlete, you don't know what that looks like. Just think about a piece of paper. It's 93 square inches. Fold it back by about a third. That's how much space a 4-pound animal has on which to live her life for her entire existence. It's hard to imagine a more miserable existence. They can hardly move an inch their whole lives. And so by giving them cage-free conditions where they can spread their wings, they can walk around, they can lay their eggs in nests and perch and engage in other important natural behaviors, you're reducing the amount of suffering they're enduring, and you're reducing the food safety risks.
I want to bring up Diamond Farm again. Bill, you brought up Diamond Farm. Paul, I want to ask you about something. Pete Diamond, who runs Diamond Farm in Western Massachusetts, explained why his father switched two cages in 1968, and he says, quote, chickens have a pecking order. Sometimes they peck each other, and if they draw blood on one of them, all of the chickens gang up on it and kill it. So he says that there's actually a higher mortality rate for chickens in a cage-free environment than chickens who are held in cages. What's your response to that?
Well, maybe in 1968, conditions were pretty different, but think about it. Every single other egg farm in Massachusetts, both those much bigger than this one and those much smaller than this one, are perfectly capable of raising their egg-laying hens without any cages at all. Every single other one. Mr. Bell says this farm wouldn't even be affected by this, so I'm not sure what the concern is about if he happens to be right about that. I'm not stipulating it, but he says that's the case. And so if every single other farm can do it, I'm confident that they can. In fact, this one farm also has lots of cage-free chickens. Many of their chickens are cage-free. They happen to have thousands who they also confine in cages. And so all we're suggesting is that they treat all of their chickens in a cage-free manner, just like every single other egg farm in the Commonwealth.
But we do. Bill, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that.
Paul's absolutely correct in terms of every other single egg farm. The ones that are members of our association include two farms, which are larger, more commercial than the smaller ones, who are cage-free. One of them is expanding, which I think people here would think is a good idea. However, they are also opposed to this referendum because they say, we do this because we think that's the way things should be done, but we think it's very unfair for everybody to have to do it this way. That's not the kind of system we want to live in.
So essentially no government interference. Let the farmers do. What you're saying is let the farmers do what they want to do, and the government shouldn't be telling everyone to do the same thing. Is that what you're saying?
In essence, now there need to be rules, and you have in other states livestock boards that do set rules. You have rules that are being discussed in the Massachusetts legislature. There are practices that need to be respected by everybody in Massachusetts, but to mandate that everybody buy a certain food, and there are other ways of having hens, and we've worked together with HSUS on this, and we enjoyed working. We're sorry that it failed at the national level. There's something called enriched colony housing, which allows the birds to walk around, to spread their wings, to perch. These are the animal behaviors that we're trying to promote. We work together on this, and that, in our mind, would be a far better solution at the national level.
Bill, I want to hone in on an unspoken but key idea here. Do the farmers you represent believe that hens can feel pain and discomfort?
Yes, of course they do. If they're stressed, they lay fewer eggs. The study that I alluded to before tried to ascertain the stress levels in hens, and they found, whether it was conventional cages or free range, they found them all equal. But if you walk into a hen house, the hens, you can tell by their behavior if they're unhappy. And the farmers, whether it's out of a philosophical love for their hens or whether it's just we want our hens to be happy because they produce better, but yes, they do care. And the University of Connecticut poultry scientist who covers all of New England has testified numerous times as an expert on hens that, yes, hens do have sensitivities, and we need to respect them, but we do not need to mandate cage-free.
I don't think I'm going out on a limb here to guess that Paul would say, then shouldn't the hens be afforded living conditions that allow them to stand up, lie down, turn around, and spread their wings? I'm just work with me toward why that doesn't logically follow for you.
That's why we work together on this subject in Washington, and which was supported by virtually the entire New England delegation. The question is whether that mandated or would have mandated doing exactly what you said. We're talking about this ballot item here right now, which is flawed, and we oppose it.
And what's the compromise? I mean, you mentioned a sort of enriched housing. If we went along with the premise that you feel that this is poorly worded, but you support cage-free to a large degree, and you understand, but you also are concerned about government interference in all of this, what's the compromise? Obviously, a lot of people think that keeping animals in strict confinement is wrong and is inhumane. And it sounds like you agree with that as well. What do we do to make sure that Massachusetts does move forward and does have things on the books that would benefit everybody and still be humane?
The proper treatment of animals is due to good management, more than housing. And I think every study will show you that. And the egregious examples of inhumane treatment of animals, that is due to really poor management. And that is something that should be closely overseen.
Okay.
I impress you a little bit more on this. We spoke to Peter Singer about this. He's a professor of bioethics at Princeton University and a longtime animal rights activist. We have a clip from him. Let's listen.
At the moment, there are large numbers of animals that are kept in conditions where they cannot even turn around. Their confinement is so narrow, talking about veal calves and breeding sows here, that they can't turn around. They can't walk really a single step to or fro. They have nothing to do except stand up or lie down all day. And, you know, nobody really who thinks about it would think this is a decent way to keep an animal. If you kept a dog like that, you would no doubt get fined. But because these are happening unseen by the public, they continue, and this law will stop that.
Singer also told us there's no right of consumers to lower-priced goods, irrespective of how the goods are produced. What do you say to those two things?
I would say that the enriched colony housing that we worked on, it was more than a compromise. It was actually both of our groups saying this is scientifically better.
Just to make it clear for our listeners, I'm sorry to interrupt, if the battery cages, those type cages, are economy class on a plane, enriched housing would be economy plus, business class? Give us an example.
Let's go with that analogy. Okay. Yes, the enriched colony are the business or first class seats where everybody is comfortable. Some people would say that taking out the seats in the plane and just having everybody walk around the floor is not necessarily the best way to do it. It was a false analogy, Josh. Okay.
I want to ask because I've heard a lot of discussion about public health issues, right? What do we know about what kinds of public health risks there may or may not be regarding this? And I want to ask you about this first, Paul.
Thanks, Deb. The consumer protection organizations endorse Yes on Three because they know that confining animals in cramped cages is bad for consumers. It increases the risk of salmonella, it increases the risk of other foodborne pathogens, and if you know anybody who has been sickened by salmonella, or if you yourself have had the unfortunate reality of being sickened by it, you know that it's a serious matter, and anything that we can do to make the food safer is a worthwhile thing to do. And so the reason, again, the Center for Food Safety and Consumer Federation of America endorsed the yes vote on question three, because they know that Massachusetts consumers deserve that protection.
And Bill, what do you say? Because it's my understanding that there are conflicting studies. Some say that there is an increase in salmonella and other foodborne illnesses. Others say there are not. What do you say?
Well, first, there was a study that came out just last week by Penn State that said the eggs from the smaller farms, cage-free, are much more likely to have salmonella than the eggs in the supermarket, which by and large are from the very large commercial farms. That's one study. Let me give you a real story. And again, it comes down to management. You have an egg farm up in Maine, DeCoster Egg Farms, which no longer owns that property. But they had a property out in Iowa, which caused that huge salmonella outbreak, one of the worst food poisoning outbreaks that's happened in this country. Mr. DeCoster and his son are on the verge of going to jail over that. That was really poor management, because you take his farm in Maine, which now has a new owner, and because of that outbreak in Iowa, everybody, including the Boston media and including members of the congressional delegation, said, well, God, we better look at Maine because that's the same farm. The FDA came up to Maine and went through it with a fine-tooth comb and found not one incidence of salmonella under that new management. And to go into any place and go through it as swabbing as much as they did and not find salmonella, that's almost amazing. I mean, you could perhaps go down to your cafeteria and not have that good a record. It's management. It's not the housing.
Okay, we are out of time. It's understandable, then, that there are differences of opinion and even different studies about the food safety question. But I want to make sure we get in as many questions as possible. We have one question from Jackie Gamberini from McCormick's Gender Leadership and Policy Program. And this is for you, Paul. Proponents talk about the psychological effects of cage confinement on animals. Would you please tell us more about what the scientific literature says about the mental capacities of farm animals?
Well, thank you, Jackie, for the question. As Josh correctly pointed out earlier, the chickens, the pigs, the calves, these animals are individuals. They have likes, they have dislikes. They have personalities, and when you force them to live in cages that are so cramped that they can barely move an inch their entire lives, they suffer tremendously. They suffer both physically from the muscle atrophy and joint pain, but they also suffer mentally. In the same way, if you were to take a dog and put her in a crate where she couldn't even turn around for her whole life, she'd go insane. And that's what happens to animals who are put into perpetual immobilization. They go insane because these animals are smart, they're intelligent, and they don't deserve the type of cruelty that is meted out unto them on these factory farms, and that's why question three will help prevent that type of cruelty.
Bill, do you want to jump in there just briefly?
And I'm not going to disagree. In fact, I'm going to read something that I read just the other day from Josh Balk, who's here and with whom I have enjoyed working, And in his publication, he says, with virtually all major egg buyers in the country switching to cage-free, the lives of our nation's laying flock is set to dramatically improve. Congratulations, Josh. Congratulations, Paul. Congratulations, American Humane Association. That still returns me to this question of the ballot item is flawed and is going to drastically increase the cost of eggs in Massachusetts. And as the Massachusetts Veterinary Association has said, it will have other unintended consequences. It does not allow for scientific changes. You know, once you enact something into law and then changes appear, you're stuck with that law for quite a while still.
Okay, unfortunately, I think we are just about out of time. We have enough time left for our closing statements.
Each representative will now have 45 seconds for a closing argument. Based on a coin flip before the show, we'll hear first from Paul Shapiro, representing the supporters of Question 3.
Imagine a chicken. She's trapped inside of a cage within a windowless warehouse. She has so little space to move that she can't even spread her wings for her entire life. She eats, sleeps, defecates, and lays eggs for human consumption in the same meager space every single day, day in and day out. That's the reality for thousands of animals here in Massachusetts because there are currently no rules for the confinement of farm animals. Question 3 is very simple. It says that animals who are used for food ought to be able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. That's it. If you agree, then please join with the MSPCA and the Humane Society and vote yes for question 3.
And the last word goes to Bill Bell from the New England Brown Egg Council, representing some of the opponents of question 3.
If you believe that eggs should be produced in a cage-free environment, you can buy those eggs right now. This is America, and the marketplace responds. But do not vote in support of this referendum question. It will have unforeseen consequences. To begin with, it will increase the price of food substantially for everyone, including especially those least able to afford it. For low-income people, food is 34% of their available funds. Also, this proposed law sets the bar much higher for Massachusetts than anywhere else, 50% higher than the American Humane Association standards. No egg farm is going to want to produce for Massachusetts under this exceedingly high bar, and eggs, therefore, will be incredibly expensive, much more so than the California figures that we've been talking about.
Well, we will see what happens in November. We are out of time today. First, I want to say thank you to our guests, Paul Shapiro, Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the U.S. Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Deb.
Also, Bill Bell, General Manager of the New England Brown Egg Council. Thanks so much, Bill. Yeah. Also, special thanks to our partners at the Boston Globe, Joshua Miller, for co-moderating today. Thank you, Josh.
It's great to be here with you.
Also, we want to thank UMass Boston, particularly David Cash, Dean of the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies. And thanks to our audience. Thank you very much, our live audience. That's it for Radio Boston today. Thank you.